Hi, this is Dr. Pollack. I have a fascinating interview today with Dr. Greg Eckel. He is a specialist in one of my favorite areas, and we'll get into why that's the case. And I think we both share the same passion for helping people with these kinds of problems. So Dr. Eckel specializes in neurodegeneration. So rather than me talking about that and what he does and how he got here, let's ask Dr. Eckel to tell us his path, his journey.
Well, thanks for having me on. It's a pleasure. And, you know, I have been in medical practice for 21 years. Came out of medical school in 2001 and had a general family practice here in Portland, Oregon. Wasn't until 4 years ago that I got the School of Hard Knocks curriculum in neurodegeneration. My wife, Soraya, started to develop rapidly progressing dementia. She was young. She was early 40s. And, you know, you think about, well, what could that be in a 42-year-old woman? And we were thinking, well, maybe it's early menopause. Maybe it's hormonal changes. Maybe it's mold. You know, we go after the low-hanging fruit, maybe an infection. But rapidly progressing dementia in anyone is alarming. And within 3 months, Soraya wasn't able to talk. It became very ominous on what is in the differential there. And I had a lot of growing up to do during that period. You know, we had blended our medical practices. She was a certified nurse midwife, nurse practitioner. We blended our families, her 3 kids, my 2 kids, and we even had a maid named Alice, just like the Brady Bunch. And it was just alarming. You know, you get into that differential and there's, you know, autoimmune conditions of the brain and Creutzfeldt-Jakob disease, which is CJD. And I always knew Soraya was one in a million, but unfortunately brain experts agreed and they gave her the diagnosis of CJD, which only gets proven until, you know, they offer you a free brain biopsy at the end of that.
I was going to say, right? Brain biopsy, right?
Yeah. And it, you know, I don't wish that on anybody. I was uniquely positioned, loving husband and clinician. So I swung for the fence and I went digging deep with really her life on the line. And unfortunately, I didn't come up with therapies that helped her. However, the therapies that I did discover are helping thousands of people around the globe now. That's how I, you know, really got into becoming a brain expert is I talked to a lot of brain experts in particular for, can we do anything for my wife? So, you know, in such a weird way, the whole process has ripped me open as a human being. It reinstated my faith in the oneness of all. And it's just life is not for the faint of heart. Let's just say that. I knew, you know, going through it, I knew that the medical system was broken. But to go through it with your wife's life on the line, it's really heartbreaking. And, you know, coming out of it, I knew I didn't want my suffering to be for naught. And so I really, utilize that as a catalyst to, you know, put a flag in the earth and taking a stand for people and their brains, their brain health and neurodegeneration in particular, because I don't know if you've seen, but it's really gets overwhelming and quite depressing if you have a neurodegenerative condition, because there've been no major breakthroughs, right? I mean, for Parkinson's disease, we're still using a drug that was sanctioned in 1974, carbidopa levodopa. And I think that it's time that we make some change for people. And that's what I codified. I created my fancy approach to brain regeneration. I kind of went into Parkinson's disease because, as I said, CJD is a very rare disorder. But in the research, what I discovered was prions. And prions are misfolded proteins. And in the first prionic textbook, which I have, which is not that old, you know, you find, oh, there's beta amyloid plaque. Well, there's Alzheimer's. It's alpha-synuclein. That's Parkinson's. There's a whole tau protein. So there's a bunch of different misfolded proteins in neurodegeneration that causes the symptoms of the brain, central nervous system breaking down. And so I'm going after that. And, you know, I like to say I'm a clinician's clinician. So I want to use stuff that works. You know, came across frequencies, and I've been saying, I believe light and sound frequencies are the future of medicine. And boy, we really need them now more than ever.
Let's go back to prions. I call them prions. Some people call them prions, tomato, tomato.
Right? That's right. That's right.
Well, yeah. let's tell everybody that prions are mad cow disease.
Yeah. So, well, not just that. So prions or prions in Creutzfeldt-Jakob disease is mad cow syndrome, right? So we've heard of that, but it's also called scrappy in sheep. It's called wasting syndrome in deer. So all of the animal species have misfolded proteins that is similar to mad cow. We're more familiar with mad cow syndrome because of the tainted beef in the 80s. Coming out of England into Europe. You know, interestingly enough, there wasn't a spike or a considerable spike of Creutzfeldt-Jakob disease or prionic activity. The other thing, you know, when you start reading about prions, they're always called infectious prions, which is alarming, right? You can't destroy these misfolded proteins. Heat won't do it. I mean, it's like very intense chemical preparations would do it. That's not something that you put in the human body or in an animal body for that matter. So they're misfolded proteins. So I think the $1 trillion question is, why do proteins misfold? I have a couple hypotheses on that we can talk about. But you also then look at other misfolded proteins. So, you know, that came, Stanley Prusiner got the Nobel Prize in 1987 for discovering these prions or misfolded proteins. They're interesting cells in the body because they don't have any cellular apparatus per se. And he was seeing these on the slide. And of course, with major breakthroughs, there's much conjecture saying, no, it's a virus, you're seeing something else, it's not there. He really stuck to it. And because of his work, you know, we now have this whole classification of diseases. And why people aren't really talking about them is we're not finding a lot of substances to deactivate the prions and to eliminate them from the body. And so I think they're called infectious prions because they start once one cell misfolds from damage is really where I think it's coming from, traumas, unresolved traumas. It can even be ancestral traumas, oddly enough, levels of toxicity, chemicals in the environment. Those are the biggest runners of, I think, why proteins, they get denatured, right? When you look at just naturally how do proteins denature, it's usually from a couple of, you know, substances, temperatures, chemicals. I've put the trauma component in there because I really, over the last 4 years, really deep dive into neurodegeneration and the folks that I'm seeing with dementia, Alzheimer's, even the CJD, it's, you know, there is a pattern for folks, whether it's conscious or unconscious, of unresolved traumas. And that to me makes sense as to why proteins would denature or misfold. But then other classifications in there, like I mentioned, was Parkinson's. That's alpha-synuclein. That's a misfolded protein. That's a prion. So we can't just put prions in the CJD or in mad cow syndrome category. You know, interestingly enough, Dale Bredesen was in Stanley Prusiner's lab, and he has written about potentially anxiety as being caused by prionic activity. So there's some, you know, that's a early thought process, not a lot of research around that, but I thought that's interesting that we can trace him back into some of his beginnings down there at UCSF in that lab and seeing the impact of that prions have on our health.
I discovered also that there are prions in the urinary tract.
Yeah. So we can't, you know, it's interesting because they are not destroyed. I mean, they're ubiquitous in our environment. When folks actually get, you know, learn about prions, you can really get neurotic because, they're not destroyed. Like even you cremate the human body at death, those prions are not destroyed. So that's very high temperature. So, you know, they're not destroyed. So, you know, eating tainted beef is, you know, where it was called kudru, out of the tribes of Papua New Guinea, the women and children were eating the brains of the grand
kuru.
And with that, the eating the brains, there was a higher incidence of CJD. So that's really where it, you know, was discovered in people. Now people aren't eating brains anymore. We are being exposed to prions though. They're on our silverware. Like they're on surgical instruments. They're on, you know, in the crematoriums. And so they're just, it's not, these things don't go away. So you can start to get like, oh my gosh, they're everywhere. Well, yeah, they're everywhere. They've been here. You know, there is nothing to be afraid of there. I do think that there are a lot of things that we can do in a preventative measure. And that's really in the holistic component of, you know, what I've put together in that my fancy approach, which is a capital FANC, because it is a lot, especially in central nervous system and neurodegeneration of, well, how do you prevent that? And then more importantly, how do you treat it? You know, because a lot of people were just seeing a rise in neurodegeneration.
So even if you burn the protein, if you destroy the protein, I mean, if you're burning it, you're basically burning the proteins as well.
Yeah, the prion, this component of a misfolded protein, they're not dying with that, even with high bleach concentrations. Now, there are a few substances that we have come across, HOCl, anhydrous chloride, and DMSO. It's about $2 million of research on both of those substances. I have a patent pending on a nasal spray where I put together a blend into a nasal spray called Clear Mind that we're actually showing really good results with clinically.
In the brain?
Yeah.
In other words, it gets up into the olfactory apparatus and goes up into the brain?
Correct. Yeah.
And it goes from the forebrain into the rest of the brain as well?
Yeah, so I don't have that research on exactly the patterning or mechanism of action there, but I will tell you clinically, we've got folks with the Parkinson's diagnosis, and a lot of times what will happen is they will start having a weakening of their voice because it's on cranial nerve 10. The vagus nerve goes through the vocal cords. And with the use of the Clear Mind nasal spray, they are having unsolicited response to those around them. I actually remember I have a business owner. He came back and he said, "Hey doc, I think that nasal spray is working." I said, "Oh really? How is that?" He said, "Well, you know, I just led a meeting at my company." He's got about 450 employees. And he said, people came up to me afterwards and said they could really understand me speaking a lot clearer. He said, "The only change that I've done is that nasal spray." So it was, time and time again, I've got a lot of folks coming back saying that, you know, we're showing some repair of central nervous system tissue because their voices are coming back.
Margellans. Have you found any relationship to Margellans and prions?
I have not. Have you seen anything around that?
No, I've only seen like three or four Margellans patients, and they're enigmas anyway.
Yes,
but
I thought
because you're dealing with whatever this is, and it's probably not really an infectious agent.
Right. You know, it's called infectious because they basically, once one protein misfolds, it starts triggering the other proteins around them to misfold. So there's some cell signaling that occurs. So it gets called infectious. And I tried to trace it back to the first time somebody said infectious prion. And I think it's because of the eating of the brains that was considered the infectious component. But when you think infectious, it's as if, you know, like a virus or a bacteria, and that they're setting up shop and promulgating and propagating themselves in the body, but that's not what this means. And I don't like the word infectious with
it. It's not like an infection typically takes over the genetic machinery of the cell, right?
Yeah, and utilizes it. Exactly.
This is different.
Yeah. Right.
I'd also know that I remember traveling in Greece, and I was on a ship, a ferry, going from Greece to Italy, and I saw this guy open up his bag, and he had this sheep skull, that's a delicacy in the Middle East, isn't it? Sheep's brains.
Yeah.
So talk about another potential vector for.
That's right. Yeah, I really recommend not eating raw brains. That's, you know, just kind of as a policy.
Even cooked brains, if we're telling us that we can't cook brains them by heat.
Yeah, brain. I would not do the sweetbread. Like that is off of my palate these days. Just knowing, you know, what I know, what I've seen. I mean, you know, with living with that disease process. You know, it's just
Why take the risk?
There's no reason for it.
Fantastic. So now that we have a better understanding of these misfolded proteins, then let's talk about how you discovered FANC.
Yeah, so it was, you know, really looking for, you know, pulling together therapeutics. So I've been in practice now 21 years. At that point, it was 17 years. And as you know, as being a clinician, you know, because you have research on something doesn't necessarily mean it's going to pan out in real life. And of course, we love the research, but I'm a clinician's clinician in that I want to see results. Like, you know, they tell you when you go to medical school, well, don't get attached to results. Well, that, no wonder it's depressing for a lot of physicians and providers out there.
Especially in neurologists.
They have the highest rate of suicide, actually. Of the licensed medical providers.
Well, besides psychiatrists.
Right, because there's been no breakthroughs, right? And it can be quite depressing for all involved. So, you know, there is actually plenty of research out there. So what the F stands for is a functional medicine approach. You know, I'm a naturopathic doctor and Chinese medicine practitioner by training and licensure. And in Oregon, we're primary care providers. I have a DEA license. I can prescribe any drug on the planet. I just choose not to at this point in time. You know, I get more and more confidence with how the body can heal itself given the right information. And I speak more confidently every year that I'm in practice because we see more and more spontaneous remissions where, you know, the uncurable disease processes people no longer have. I am not curing anybody of anything. It is their vital force, their vitality, and the medications that we're using. You know, the root word of doctor is docere, is teacher. So I'm all about educating folks about what their options are, what the choices are. So to have as many choices as possible, you want to step out of the box and utilize all of the medical systems. So that is what I call the F, or in the functional medicine approach. Also, we say we treat heart-centered dynamic beings moving through time and space. You know, in Chinese medicine, there's no word for mind-body medicine. It's all heart-based medicine, the emperor, the empress. And that really resonates with me. It resonates with the folks that I see here. Because we know the system is broken, the reductionist model of the pieces and parts, it's not reality. It's not how we function. You know, sure, you break your arm or you have some, you know, drastic event that happens out there. Do not come and see us in our clinic. Go to the ER and, you know, get life-saving measures. But for chronic illness or I would say really autoimmune conditions, chronic illness, most all the other pieces of medicine that you're needing care, you want somebody to address you as a human and, you know, understand all of the interrelationships. So that's that functional component, which then leads into the A, which is assessment. You know, I don't know about you, Bill, but I always get people calling me, what can I take? Or I'm sure you're getting called like, well, what PEMF machine should I use, right? As if it's the one, you know, one trick pony. You know, life is way more dynamic than that. So in the assessment is crucial. of taking a broad look and turning over many more stones. I mean, there's low-hanging fruit neurodegeneration around hormone imbalances, around levels of toxicity, in particular heavy metals. And then the microbiome is, that's the basic three-legged stool for all neurodegeneration, but in an assessment component, it's essential because you could set sail in the wrong direction right out of the gate. You know, I see tons of people taking tons of supplementation and doing all kinds of different therapeutics, but they don't have a roadmap, nor do they have a clue to measure how, where they're going. And, you know, like that Yogi Berra quote is, you know, just watch out. If you don't know where you're going, you might wind up there, right? And so you want to have a guide along the way. Again, I like to say, I don't want people suffering for naught. At this point, I'm talking to people around the globe, and it is very lonely with neurodegeneration. You know, they go in to see their neurologist, they get evaluated on an annual basis. Maybe there's some medications that may, like, even for, you know, Aricept for cognitive decline, it's like, really, that's what we're using for, like, there's no other discussion around diet or exercise or, you know, other therapeutics that we are showing really great clinical results with, which I'll share with you after we get through this fancy component. Then we get into nerve health and N, the F-A-N. N is on nerve health. Everybody wants to start with that. Like, should I take mushrooms? Should I take, you know, what are the supplements that I should be taking for brain health? Is it ALA? Are we doing, you know, longevity components with NMN? I wrote about many of these in my book. It's called Shake It Off, A Fancy Approach to Parkinson's Solutions. And it's not just all codified there. It's not a laundry list. It's like you really want an individualized approach. So that's the N section. And then dash C is the largest lever that I have discovered in 21 years of practice, which is cellular regeneration. So regenerative medicine is the largest lever that I have discovered. And we're doing really really cutting edge therapeutics here with a laser activated and guided, very small embryonic like stem cell procedure. So it's a V cell, V as in Victor, which are just fascinating stem cells that are endemic in your body that we can activate with a song modulated laser, which goes from light through a filter into sound. And there's a lot of research coming out of UCLA using exosomes with ultrasound, guided ultrasound treatments. And we're modeling our therapeutics off of that. So that's it in a nutshell. So if you've got any questions in there.
No, I think neurodegeneration and rebuilding the brain is definitely the future, I think. But just to amplify a point that you made, you know, if you don't consider all the other things, if people could be drinking, Diet Cokes, right?
Oh, yeah.
To wake themselves up. So the diet component is going to mess with your brain. Sugar is going to mess with your brain. So if you're having neurological degenerative disorder, and we're all neurodegenerative, all of us,
right? Yeah,
if you live just long enough, you're neurodegenerative.
It's happening, right? And it's happening, unfortunately, you know, so Alzheimer's, so 2017 Blue Cross Blue Shield's actuarial data of average age of onset of Alzheimer's in that medical system, I was like, wow, it's that young, 47 years old, the first signs of neurodegeneration in Blue Cross Blue Shield. So that, you know, there, those are the bean counters looking at, well, what are we doing here? And that is with a condition with no known cure, right? So that we know there are a lot of things that we can do. In fact, I just to share a story or two here of what we're seeing. So that fancy approach, how it rolls out clinically, you know, we are using hyperbaric oxygen, we're using Chinese medicine, we're using nutraceuticals, Chinese herbs, low-level laser therapy, you know, we're really putting as much on this teeter-totter as we can in a coherent manner to get some, to get results. So I had a 65-year-old retired pharmacist who, you know, was able to do complex math in his head, you know, while he was brushing his teeth and twirling around, right? You know, he really accelerated through COVID, meaning he progressed in a negative fashion into a stage 2 Alzheimer's state, which is he was not able to do 1+1 math, very confused, you know, pretty gone. And he came in, we did our laser therapy. So the laser activated and guided V cell procedure. And within 30 minutes after that procedure, he was rattling off multiplication factors, like complex tables. And within a month, his sense of smell came back. So cranial nerve 1, olfactory nerve. This isn't supposed to happen, right? You're not supposed to be able to regenerate neurons in the brain. So we are seeing that. I have folks that were totally debilitated with Parkinson's on the couch, tremor so bad they can't get dressed, walking with a walking aid, stopped walking because they were falling down even with a tripod walker, and came out, started out with assessment, got their foundations down, came out to what I call Camp Nature Cures here. And actually, Cindy called me a year later from the park saying, hey, Dr. Echol, guess what? Said, you know, I don't like getting calls like that from my patients because it could go either way. And it was, she said, my husband just told me to slow down walking in the park. It's like, wow, Cindy, when is the last time he's ever said that? That like this is a woman that was stuck on the couch, totally debilitated. She said it's been over a decade. So it isn't, I always take that as great hope that it's never too late to try. Like, it, you know, I think a lot of times when, especially you get on the internet, it's like, well, this, here's your condition and here's where you're going. And it's like, don't believe that because you are not a statistic. And there are those people are not thinking outside of the box. They're just kind of, you know, submitting to the dominant thought process, which is there's no hope for you and there's no solution. Just know there are a lot of people, you know, and I really congratulate you for putting out the summit because it is about getting the information out to people to show like, hey, there are a lot of heart-centered providers and practitioners that are really working for the collective good for all of us. So, you know, I just wanted to share some stories because it sometimes it feels like, well, I haven't seen it. So it's really hard for me to believe it, right?
Well, and I did a study on concussion and with a very relatively low intensity PMF system, we had people doing 2 hours a day of this battery operated low intensity system. And we monitored them using a device called a brain gauge.
Okay.
All right. And then we did a scale, a concussion scale. So we did two instruments to monitor their progress. And so for the first 2 weeks, we monitored them every day. And then after that, we monitored them every week. And then after that, every month. So we did basically 3 months of treatment, 2 hours a day to different parts of the brain, front and back, side to side. Again, with a small device called a flex pulse. It was like the flex pulse, but not mm-hmm. exactly that way, that sure. device. Sure. But within a week, the scales started moving up in terms of functionality, in terms of the brain gauge. And most people plateaued at about 2 weeks. A few patients actually kept going up, but most people plateaued certainly within a month, but most people plateaued within 2 weeks. At the end of 3 months, we stopped the treatment and reassessed them. They all regressed. They all lost about half of their gain. So we know with that particular treatment that we basically had some improvement in function, but we didn't fix the brain because otherwise it would have stayed, right?
Yeah.
We don't know whether 3 hours a day would have worked better or whether 6 months of treatment would have worked better, but that's, you know, the data that we had at the time.
Well, that is true across the board with the PEMF research that I've seen in neurodegeneration. It, you know, you've got to get into escape velocity, right? And when you think about central nervous system degeneration, that didn't just happen overnight. And so, you know, it's the research that I've read on, consistently in neurodegeneration with PEMF is you've got to consistently do the therapeutic. And that's why I said it's not a standalone therapy in my thinking, in that because there's so many facets of what we're trying to move. Like you've got this 800 pound gorilla over here, and it's the tip of the iceberg. You know, like for Parkinson's, it could have started 10 to 20 years prior in the gut. And so, you know, if you have 20 to 40 years of neurodegenerative process, like you said, like we're all dealing with this. And if you think that you're not, you're kidding yourself, because, you know, the stats on over 65 years old in North America, by, I believe it's 2030, 50% of people will start having some noticeable neurodegenerative symptoms and cognitive decline,
memory loss,
dementia, et cetera. So it is, we use a low level PEMF pad that we discovered before we got on the air with you, but also I have a clinic coming in Park City, Utah, where we're bringing in ITMS, which is similar. It's a transcranial magnetic stimulation, a little higher. And that there's research coming out on, and we're leading with the Traumatic Brain Injury Center there. And we're working with NFL players and retired sports figures. Chuck Liddell actually is going to be one of the main spokespeople. I didn't know him prior, but he's a mixed martial artist world champion. He's knocked out 6 times in his life, like flat out, lights out. Major brain traumas. He's got his brain back. NFL players are texting, you know, their kids after Thanksgiving, like, thank you so much, we've got our dad back. This was with 40 years ago playing NFL. Now we're able to turn their brains back on with using these technologies of really frequency.
Well, so we can agree on frequency. We can agree on PEMFs. And sometimes the combination works better, and sometimes one works better than the other.
That's right.
It's empirical. It's often a matter of trial and error. I want to go back to a point you made about a broken medical system.
Yeah.
I don't think it's broken. I think it's a piece.
Okay.
And the problem is the forces of economics and the forces of academic medicine at the time of the Pellegrino Report basically said, we're going to capture this world. We're going to take this world by storm. We're going to make this our system, the dominant medical system. And it's a pharmaceutically controlled system. It's a surgically controlled system. Most of that happened to places like Hopkins, University of Chicago, you know, et cetera, the big medical schools. They say, so we're going to force this system on everybody for everything. That's the problem. And that paradigm still exists.
Well, that is the system. That system is broken.
Well, it isn't. It isn't the broken system. It's that system is still
okay. That's on purpose. Got it. I got it. Right.
But you need to have a bigger system. You have to have a bigger view, a bit more complex concept of health and the body and healing.
The Pellegrino Report, there's also the Flexner Report.
And the Flexner, actually.
That was put out by Carnegie Mellon. Yeah. And that that put the kibosh on an integrated model, because we did actually have an integrated model up to about 1930 in this country. And so I'm hoping that we get back to that. But unfortunately, the economics and the powers that be aren't so interested in health, because we have a very big profit in disease management and a sick based model of care. So, you know, that's the component we can. You know,
it's not broken, it's isolated. It's too isolating.
We're using the wrong system, perhaps.
And we recommend to our patients, right? Our clients and people that we talk to, we educate and inform that you need to, it's a village.
Certainly.
That medical system is one house in this bigger village. And you and I and our patients need to recognize it's one house. The people who listen to us, the people who come to us, have already acknowledged that house is not enough.
Right. Yeah. My moniker is where East meets West naturally. And so, you know, utilizing for complete care is utilizing all of the information we have at our, access to. So I totally agree. That aspect though is, driven by the economics. People don't have access to a lot of things that aren't that system.
If you're relying on somebody else to be paying for it. So there's the problem. You're relying on somebody else to be paying for it. And when you do that, then basically you're not going to do anything but whatever somebody else is going to pay for. And if somebody else is paying for it, they're controlling it.
Right.
You're not controlling it.
True.
And unfortunately, there was an experiment done in University of Washington, in Washington State, actually with Blue Cross Blue Shield. They funded something like $2 or $3 million, paltry, but they funded a program for $2 or $3 million for a short period of time, allowing people to go to massage therapy, to acupuncture, and tribal therapies. It went bankrupt in 6 months. So what does that tell you? It tells you that these needs are ongoing. It's not insurance, which is a one-time thing. That's how insurance was designed, the catastrophe, right? So you can't do it that way. The model has to be self-care, and you have to develop a lifestyle around taking care of yourself. And nobody else is going to do it for you, right? You're not going to go to an insurance company to pay for your meals.
So you're speaking to responsibility, right? It is our ability to respond.
Self-authority, self-responsibility, and self-care, self-reliance.
That's right. That's right. Yeah, the savior isn't coming, folks. We have to do it. That's why we educate this way. So yeah, thank you.
The sooner you start, as soon as you recognize that there are changes happening, as soon as you start to see that your diet needs to be changed, your lifestyle needs to be changed, you need to make these changes that you own, that you have to be responsible for. And you can't rely on the box of cereals. You can't rely on the can of goods. We have to go back to what our fundamentals are.
Yeah.
Our genetics is how old? millions of years old.
Yeah.
And the food that we have today is only in the last 100 years or so that we've developed food the way it is now. So just take that for
yes. Oh, yeah. I mean, it is that component. As a physician, I've been charged with addressing the root causes of illness. And so, sometimes people think, well, doc, why are you talking about farming policy, along those lines? So, the quality of our food and our air
and our water.
Is really important, right? Because those are fundamental building blocks of how these systems work.
Everything.
So, it gets complex quick, Bill. And that aspect around, what do we do? Let's leave with the fundamentals, which is movement, I think is one of the best things that you can do for your brain. If you do even high intensity movement for a minute. So meaning, you will increase BDNF, brain-derived neurotrophic factor, in your brain. It's also why I use Chinese medicine as a foundational discussion with people, because the Chinese were obsessed in medicine around blood flow. What travels in the blood? The healing properties of the body. So exercise increases your circulation, carrying nutrients and oxygen to your brain, which then allows your brain to regenerate. So it's not sexy, right? That is not a sexy statement, but we need to move our bodies. And if we're going to age well, I've said I want to live to be 150 years old, because if I don't make it, what do I care? But also it changes my behaviors today, in that, I've had the honor to sit with 90-year-olds and hear them say, if I known I was going to live this long, I would have done something differently. Yeah. So it is just simple movement. There's a great book out there called The 1 Minute Workout, developed by a researcher in Ontario, Canada, studying exercise physiology. And he's like, gosh, I'm supposed to be the expert. I don't have any time to work out. So he started experimenting on grad students and discovered, well, heck, if you do like a 4-minute warm up, 1 minute of high intensity workout on a bike, and then 4-minute cool down, you'll get the benefits of that. That's a big play. Increases BDNF, the brain derived neurotrophic factor, gets your heart going. It's just beneficial across the board. So it's not like you have to become a gym rat, right? We want to make it fun. And that will also, that's a big foundation.
Laughter yoga.
Yes, laughter is awesome as well. Yes.
So since this is the PEMF summit,
Yes.
Let's transition. And you and I both share an interest in PEMF.
Yes.
And one of the benefits, BDNF, PEMFs increase BDNF.
Yes. BDNF, it's anti-inflammatory. So huge benefits on the anti-inflammatory component, increasing oxygenation in the blood. You know, the benefits on that aspect, and you know, it's just so fascinating that it's from that frequency that does that. And I know you've got the different research components on what is the ideal number, and that's where the art of all of this comes in, right?
Well, one of the a blog on my website is about adenosine and how the adenosine receptors are responsible for inflammation of the body. And what that research has found is that the optimal magnetic field intensity at the target adenosine receptor is 15 Gauss.
Yeah.
Gauss is a measure of magnetic field intensity. So 15, the Earth's magnetic field is a half a Gauss. By the way, do you know what the PEMF intensity is at the space station?
40 Gauss.
No. Well, we're only 0.5 Gauss here.
Yes.
So what is it in space? What is it at the space station? 100 kilometers up?
Yeah.
0.4 Gauss.
0.4.
0.4. We're 0.5. Space station is 0.4.
That's amazing. But I thought that they put in the frequency, though. They had to put the frequency into the space station.
Nope.
No. All right, then.
No, it's the magnetic field. What they need in the space station is gravity.
Yeah.
They already have the magnetic field and they're still getting light into the space station. So they're getting those natural frequencies anyway. but the point is that in order to treat across the brain, you need the right magnetic field intensity to be able to reach deep enough into the brain to be able to decrease inflammation through the adenosine receptor on the neutrophils that circulate through the brain and the body. And that PEMFs increase ATP, they increase mitochondrial function, they increase stem cells. Neural stem cells. There was research done with neural stem cells. And 10 hertz was the frequency, but it actually was more about the intensity. And it was 24 hours of stimulation of these neural stem cells that found a 400% increase in neural stem cells at about a 400% increase in neural stem cells at about 200 growth factors were stimulated in these neural stem cells.
Yeah. So that is very similar, and that's why we stack this PEMF with hyperbaric oxygen, because we're seeing the same things in that research. Then you actually front end load it with the activated B cells to get into circulation. So you can see how all of these things stack together
to
create the velocity for folks.
Absolutely. Now, while I think that what you're doing is absolutely heroic and groundbreaking and definitely at the edge of the science. One of the things that I deal with all the time with patients as well is that I want to create as much independence as possible.
Yeah.
So unless you and I can cure a problem, can essentially reverse it, right? Or provide a very long-term benefit with our solutions. So you do intensive treatment and provide a long-term benefit. Eventually, you're going to have to repeat the treatment unless they go into a sustainable program of some kind.
Right.
But like the concussion study, people need to do their own treatments at home. So combining what you do with a home therapy, PEMF therapy program, because not everybody can afford a laser, not everybody can afford the light therapies and so on. So if you have one system only that you rely on in the home setting, who can afford HPOT?
Right. It's a subset.
It is a subset. So in your setting, actually, it works phenomenally well. But then you need to go home with something. You need to go home so you can do something every single day.
That's right. And that's what the research shows with PEMF is you've got to use it consistently through time, right? So that is, you have to create a sustainable before and after component, right? Because otherwise, you slide right back down the continuum. I get asked that all the time. Like, hey, doc, how many times do I have to come out for the camp? Interestingly enough, some folks, it is enough of a push for the vital force to correct itself where they're doing lifestyle. Everybody foundational stuff is, we're working on their diet, their movement, their mindset, their sleep hygiene, all of that is a must, right? Because without it, you're going to go right back to where you came from. And that is nobody's goal. And then having these devices wearable at home and or mats, et cetera, it's really essential so that you maintain what the benefit was and also increase and gain as you go forward. So it's a really great point.
Not only to the brain.
No, it's the whole body.
The whole body.
It's the whole body. Oh yeah. It's gotta be the whole body. And, right. And it is. Last time I checked, it's connected.
They are. I think the big toe, I discovered that the big toe is definitely connected to the brain.
Right. Probably the hard way.
Yeah. Unfortunately, that we find it out the hard way. So how can people reach you or how people get more information about what you do?
Sure. I am at bevitalpc.com and naturecuresclinic.com. So you can just Google my name or search for my name on whatever your favorite search engine is, Greg Eckel, and you'll find me out there.
And that's Dr. Greg Eckel, E-C-K-E-L.
Yes.
And you have a book, you said, called
Shake It Off.
Shake It Off.
Shake It Off, and integrative approach to Parkinson's solutions. I wrote it for people to read. So it's very readable, talks about a lot of the therapies, the research and our approach. So if we've got exercises in there, I'm a big believer in Qigong. I studied in Tibet, in Sichuan province of China. And it's a great thing that people can do to even visualize if they're having trouble moving, can just visualize the videos that we created for you. So we want to have a lot of resources for folks out there.
One last point. I also discovered early in my career that magnetic fields stimulate acupuncture points and meridians. And I have a course actually about acupuncture at PEMFs on the PEMF Training Academy.
Oh, cool.
6-hour course that I did for acupuncturists on how PEMFs can integrate. And so any whole body treatment with a PEMF system or any treatment anywhere in the body with a PEMF system is going to basically address acupuncture points and meridians as well. So yeah. That's self-acupuncture.
Yes, love it.
You can still do acupuncture with a specialist, but you can also get the benefit of acupuncture at home.
Love it. Love it.
Well, thank you very much, Greg. Phenomenal information. Very helpful. I'm sure a lot of people will watch your video over and over again, and they should. And they really should. I look forward to meeting with you and chatting with you again down the road.
Thanks so much.
Enjoy the rest of your day. Looking forward to it.